If you've ever gone to confession and confessed something like, "Father, forgive me for I haven't been praying as much as I should," then I would like to officially welcome you to the human race and welcome you to this video or podcast, whether you're listening to this or watching it or doing it as part of the small group formation or just on your own. I think this is a very common feeling. A common area of growth that we recognize in ourselves, that this is something that I should be doing as a Christian, and I should be doing more of it as a follower of Jesus. And I desire that, and yet I haven't been able to make that happen. Well, I think this is very common, and I think there's some things we can do, some principles we can enact to help make it more possible or more probable that we will follow through on it. Because we really do need to be men and women of prayer. If we want to follow Jesus, we want to be in relationship with Jesus, friendship with Jesus, then we have to be men and women of prayer. In fact, that's, I think, the best definition of prayer is the lived relationship between me and God. And if it's a relationship, then it's not just I chime in when I'm interested in something. It's not just me asking for something. It's not even me just thanking for something or praising for something. We can think of, if that was the basis of any of our human relationships, how tiring that would get. If somebody was just, oh, they just ask me for stuff, or they only come over when it's convenient for them, or they just thank me all the time. It gets so annoying. We can think of how a relationship is so multifaceted and needs all of these aspects to it. And we can incorporate this into our prayer. But before we even get there, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We need to get even more fundamental. So oftentimes when somebody comes to confession, and if that's the primary thrust of their confession, this not praying as much as I should, or know that I should, or missing my prayer time, then I might tell them something like this: before you leave the church today, I want you to write these things down on a piece of paper. When are you going to pray tomorrow? Where are you going to pray tomorrow? For how long are you going to pray tomorrow? What are you going to be doing for prayer tomorrow? And who is going to keep you accountable to pray tomorrow? Those five aspects, those five components are essential if we want to develop a habit of prayer. And so as we begin this formation series, as we begin Lent, I'm recording this on Ash Wednesday, if you couldn't tell by the ashes on my forehead, that we want to zero in on these. So let's just walk through those. First, when am I going to pray? If we just have this vague idea of I'm going to pray more, well, it's likely that we'll get to the end of our day and say, did I pray? Did I pray more? We need to know when we're going to pray to know that we actually did pray. So Have a look at your calendar and put it on the calendar. I do this from time to time. I put it on the calendar so I see it and can see how everything else comes into play with that, and how the rhythm of the day looks. Put it on the calendar. For me, I like to pray first thing in the morning, because once things get going, once you open up the email, once other people in the house wake up and conversations happen, the day can very much get away from you. And there's nothing worse than getting ready for bed and going, oh, I didn't pray yet today. So I like to pray first thing in the morning. And, you know, I have other prayers that I pray during the day, so there's more to that than that. But I encourage that. But I know other people who pray later in the day. And there's certain days that, you know, if I have my early morning, then I have my carved out time, and I do that on my calendar my holy hour on Thursday afternoon so that I remember that it happened. So I encourage you, when are you going to pray tomorrow? If you have a consistent time, pick a consistent time and stick with that. If it's an inconsistent time, then put it on the calendar so you see it and don't get into the, you know, the mode I've done this to where things are, I'm like working really hard. I'm getting a lot of stuff done. I'm like, wow, I'm just like super productive today. And I had more time today than I thought. Oh, because I forgot to do my holy hour. So when are you going to pray tomorrow? Next thing, where are you going to pray tomorrow? It's helpful to have an actual place. And yeah, Adoration Chapel, great place to pray. But if you know that getting out of your house and getting to the Adoration Chapel and the extra, you know, 10 minutes of driving or all that goes into that is going to hinder you from praying, or it's going to cut into your prayer time maybe, then, or you have sleeping kids, or, you know, you don't have access to a vehicle or whatever, then don't make that the enemy. Don't make the perfect enemy of the good. Adoration Chapel, the best place to pray? Yeah, pretty much. But is your room a bad place to pray? No. Jesus said, when you pray, go into your room and close the door. And we can do that. And sometimes that's my favorite place to pray. Just close the door, sit in a chair that's comfortable in the living room or in your bedroom or in your basement or wherever it is, and just make that your prayer spot. Some people have an actual prayer spot, a prayer corner, icons, candle, a place that kind of says prayer. That's so helpful to have a particular bit, because when we know we go into the chapel, if I go into the chapel and I'm there for 30 minutes, whether my mind wanders or I was really diligent and, you know, doing my prayer, or if I'm distracted or fall asleep, I can kind of go, yeah, well, I know that I prayed because I went to the place that I pray and I sat there for my 30 minutes. So I know that I at least did the part of it. If I don't have a particular place, I'm like, oh, I was sitting on the back porch for 30 minutes staring out at the lake. Was I praying? I don't know. Sometimes I pray there, sometimes I don't pray. So I think it's good to have a place to pray. I knew a woman who had I think 5 young kids, and so when she would pray, she would lock herself in the bathroom. That was her prayer place. She'd tell the kids, mom's going to be, you don't interrupt, and I'm not coming out and unless there's the scream of death. And so she would lock herself in the bathroom and pray. And that was the place that she had to pray. The place isn't the most important thing, but having a place is a really important thing. So where are you going to pray? When are you going to pray? When are you going to pray? Where you're going to pray? The third component is, for how long are you going to pray? If I want to pray more, it doesn't do any good to, you know, okay, at 7 o'clock tomorrow, I'm going to pray in the chair in my bedroom, the icon there, I'm going to light a candle. And then, half an hour into prayer, and I look at my watch and 5 minutes has gone by. And I'm like, oh, I can't do this anymore. But if you set, I'm going to pray for 15 minutes, then okay, I can make it another 10 minutes. I can do this. And I think that's helpful to have the time allotment that minimally I want to pray for this amount of time. Sometimes that can be difficult. You know, you're constantly looking like, well, am I done? And that's not the ideal of prayer, but I've certainly had many holy hours like that where time is just ticking by so slowly. It's in those moments that I try to remind myself and say to Jesus, you know, thank you, Lord, for allowing it to seem like we've prayed for more time than I've actually prayed. And leave it at that. But knowing how much time I'm praying, if you're trying to start off praying, do not start with, I'm going to take 2 hours of prayer every single day. No, that's something you will fail at. And then you will stop praying all together. Because of course, the enemy of the spiritual life, the devil, is always trying to get us to stop praying. And so we want to pick a number that, yeah, I can do this. When I first started praying, when I was a young man starting out with Net Ministries, they told us 30 minutes of prayer every single day. And that's what I stuck with. And then as I've grown in my spiritual life and, into priesthood, I've obviously increased that. But 30 minutes was a good start. It was challenging enough for me. Sometimes like, well, how do you fit this in with our busy travel days and things? But it was doable. It's always doable, even if sometimes I had to get up very early and sometimes I had to maybe stay up a little bit later. It was always possible. And you want to pick a number that's possible for you. And maybe you have lots of free time because you're retired. Maybe you have very little free time because you have lots of kids at home or some other reason, or you have a long work day or commute or something. So you might have to be more creative, to say that I can't pray because I don't have time isn't acceptable, really. And there's no saint that's ever said, yeah, if you don't have time, just don't pray. I think one author or saint said, if you don't have time to pray, that's okay. You can be a mediocre mom or a mediocre priest or a mediocre dad, or if you don't have time to pray one holy hour, oh, you should pray two holy hours. We have to be convinced that we need prayer. We need this relationship with the Lord. Otherwise, it's very easy to make excuses. I've found personally that when I have committed more and more to prayer, the Lord figures out the rest of my schedule, the rest of my day, and it just somehow fits. He makes it work. He's the Lord of time. He can do that. So I try not to make excuses and go with it. So when are you going to pray? Where are you going to pray? For how long are you going to pray? What are you going to do for prayer? So you show up, okay, 7 o'clock in the morning, Adoration Chapel, I'm going to be there for 30 minutes. And what am I going to do? There's not a right or wrong here. Is there certain prayers, types of prayer that are better than other types of prayer? Yeah, there's a growth. Our prayers should look differently once we've been praying for many, many years. My prayer when I first started off praying was a little bit more formulaic. Now in my journey, it's a little bit more simple. But it's where you are in your prayer, in your relationship, in your spiritual life and growth, not where somebody else is. So you go into the Adoration Chapel and you see somebody just staring at the monstrance, staring at the Eucharist, and you say, well, I should do that. Okay, but maybe you're not there yet. Maybe you stare at the Eucharist and your mind is just wandering and you can't focus and you're agitated and fidgety and bored. And maybe where you are is reading scripture, or reading a spiritual book, praying the rosary. Those are all great forms of prayer. What we want to not do is judge ourselves based on somebody else's prayer, or judge somebody else's prayer, or make the thing the end in itself. So the rosary is never the goal. Oh, prayed the rosary. I'm good. No, the goal is communion with Jesus. The goal isn't, well, I read, 13 pages of the Bible while I was in adoration today. No, the goal is learning to listen to the voice of Jesus. The goal isn't, I sang four songs when I was in my prayer time. The goal is praising Jesus. It's always about friendship. It's always about communion. If it becomes the end in itself, then we're missing it. Okay, so sometimes the what will change. What I'm doing in prayer, it might change. It should change. It should grow. It should expand. It should become more simple. But it's never, never the end. So anytime when you're praying, if you're praying scripture, praying the rosary, or singing, or reading a spiritual book, if you kind of sense the Lord coming close to you, stop. Just stop right there. Stay right there with the Lord And as long as that sensation stays with you, sometimes it's felt, sometimes it's just understood, just stay with that as long as it's there. That's not the gauge of prayer, but it's a helpful indicator that, okay, something's going on, and little gifts that the Lord gives us. So we got when, where, how, what. The last one is who. Who is going to keep you accountable? If you're walking in a small group, then this is a great accountability group to bring that up. Hey, how is your prayer? I'm struggling with it. How's your prayer? I showed up for prayer every single day this week. How's your prayer? Well, you know, I felt like I was led to read this, and this is what the Lord was, you know, saying to me, to have somebody to share prayer with, to hear their prayer struggles, their prayer journey, their prayer story. Those are helpful. To have somebody who can encourage you and keep you accountable to pray. If this is somebody who lives in your house, spouse, brother, sister, roommate, maybe it's you say, hey, if you see me at the breakfast table, will you ask me, have you prayed yet today? And if I haven't prayed yet today, then you get to tell me to go and pray. That's good. You have to give them permission to keep you accountable. You can't just expect them to do it. And you have to actually allow them. I knew somebody who his own personal rule was, if I haven't prayed by lunchtime, I don't eat lunch. I use that half hour, hour to do my prayer time. And maybe you have a similar rule, and maybe you have a coworker, and you say, hey, if I want you to ask me if I've prayed at lunchtime, and if I haven't, I'm going to leave and go pray. Or if, you know, friends, if you both commit to, we're going to pray, we like to hang out, and maybe we're getting together, like, oh, you know what, I haven't prayed yet today, let's just pause for a half hour, I'm going to go into the chapel, and then I'll meet you afterwards. So having somebody to help you along that journey is crucial. And this is the essence of religious life. Monks, nuns, you're with a bunch of people who pray, and you show up, and the bell rings, and you show up, and that's when you're supposed to pray, and you have to pray at that time. And that's good. You know, when I was in Net Ministries and first starting out praying, we all committed to this. So, you know, it was easy. You see one of your brothers or sisters on the team in the corner, you know, reading their Bible, and you say, oh yeah, I gotta do that too. And so it was helpful, it was built in. But if you don't have that atmosphere, that culture around you, you have to be a little bit more intentional about it and find that. So those five components, when, where, how, what, who, are crucial. And as we start this Lenten journey in particular, I really encourage you to write those down and stick with them. The most important thing, though, the most important thing when you're trying to start a habit of prayer is simply to show up. Just show up every single day. Whether the day before seemed like it went really well or went really poorly or it was really long or really distracting or, I missed the exact time, I got there late, you know, we have all sorts of excuses not to pray. So just show up, just keep showing up. I have a spiritual director as a priest that I meet with regularly, and that's regularly what I'll say. And he'll ask about prayer, I'll be sharing about prayer, and I say, you know, all I can say is I show up. I'm faithful. I keep showing up. I don't always feel like anything is happening in prayer, but I see the fruits of it later. And that's important. The fruit of my prayer is not what's happening in prayer. And oh, that I felt like a great prayer time. The fruit of prayer is, am I growing in peace? Am I growing in joy? Am I growing in generosity? Am I growing to be more and more like Jesus, who's the one I'm spending time with, because prayer is how I live out my friendship with God. So my encouragement to you, when are you going to pray? Where are you going to pray? How long are you going to pray? What are you going to do for prayer? Who's going to keep you accountable for prayer? Get those five components, keep showing up, and we're going to have a good Lent. We'll see you next time.